be a possibility. Bringing Quenthel out to receive the collected insights of an Illithid had been an exercise to fortify her in this time of Lady Lolf's need. She was the matron mother of Menzo Berenzon, and so ruled supreme in the city. But in truth, all who knew the inner workings of House Bayenry understood that Gromph, the eldest, the most veteran, the most wizened, had been working his will behind the scenes. It had always been a risk that taking Quenthel to Methil would empower her enough to change that dynamic. "The gods are in turmoil," so said Mistress Minolan Fay, he answered, lowering his hands, though surely not lowering his gaze. "The realignment is well underway in many different corners."
"The Spider Queen has bigger concerns."
"Why are you asking me, and not her? You are the matron mother of Menzo Berenzon."
"Do not deign to tell me who I am or how I am to act,"
Matron Mother Quenthel replied.
"I would not bother Lolf for answers that others can provide, nor trouble her handmaidens in unweaving the web that I might learn what others in my city already know."
"Do you think personal pettiness is above the gods?" Gromph asked bluntly. Then came a smile, surprising him. A wry and knowing grin, an evil one that the elder boy of House Bayenry knew well, though he had not seen it in well over a century.
"And the insolent rogue remains inconsequential," Matron Mother Quenthel reasoned. "A thorn to be used against a rival goddess, turned to the glorious darkness for no practical reason than to pain the witch Mialiki."
"Or turned into failure yet again for the Spider Queen, and thus the scream of pain you heard that began your most recent journey."
"In heart and soul, the rogue Doe Erden betrayed Lady Lolf yet again."
"As when the rogue Doe Erden killed you," Gromph thought, but did not say, though he might as well have said it, he realized, for his grin had surely betrayed the notion. "Mialiki won that minor battle for the heart of Driz Doe Erden." Gromph nodded as he spoke, looking away from his sister. Indeed, he was looking into the past, trying to figure out how his mother might have handled such news. How might Quenthel ultimately weigh against that standard, he wondered. "Shall I go and exterminate the rogue Doe Erden?" the Archmage asked. Matron Mother Quenthel fixed him with an incredulous, almost pitying stare, and Gromph had his answer. The Mind Flayer had given her so much, for of course, that was the correct answer, the answer Gromph would have given, the answer Evenel would have given, the answer Lolf needed from Matron Mother Quenthel of the City of Spiders. Possessed of this information regarding the source of Lady Lolf's scream before her encounter with the Illithid, petty Quenthel would have already sent Gromph and a dozen other assassins on their way to exterminate the puny rogue of House Doe Erden. A useless endeavor that would reap nothing but a momentary flash of vengeful joy, soon to be lost in the knowledge that the rogue was then with his goddess, and that goddess was not Lolf, and that Lolf was not sated. And then, with such a simple matter of the finality of death, the goddess could never be.
"To take with a sword is easy," Matron Mother Quenthel stated. "To take with a heart is desirable."
"And yet the goddess could not take his heart." Quenthel smiled again. No, Gromph couldn't think of her as Quenthel any longer, he realized. Matron Mother Quenthel smiled again, an awful, wicked, delicious, inspiring smile.
"What we cannot take, we break,"
Matron Mother Quenthel quietly observed. Yes, Gromph knew. He had relegated himself to subservient status once more, in more than official rank. All of the years he had nurtured Minolan Fay, his student in the ways of intrigue, his puppet in his plans of dominion over his pathetic sister, his lover,
All of that would likely unwind now that Quenthal had looked so intimately into the mind of Ivanel. Ivanel the Eternal, he thought, remembering the moniker he had often heard attached to his powerful mother, one that had seemed a cruel joke when the axe of the Dwarf King had so sundered Ivanel's withered old skull. But perhaps that moniker had been more than a passing reference after all. Perhaps, through Methil's waggling tentacles, Eternal remained a fitting description. And Gromph had just given that eternal insight to his sister, as Lady Loth had demanded of him. So be it. "Tomorrow is the Festival of the Founding," Matron Mother Quenthal said. Gromph stared at her incredulously, but only at first, only until he reminded himself that this was not merely Quenthal seated across from him. Then his look turned to suspicion. After all, when had House Bayenry observed the festival in any but the most cursory and even cynical way? The 20th of Chess, the third month, was heralded as the anniversary of Menzo Baranzon's founding, and on that day, the collective defensive crouch of the city relaxed into a profound communal sigh. House gates were less guarded, indeed even opened for passers-by, for Loth was known, occasionally, to appear in some avatar form in the city, and a blessing it was upon the whole of the city in that case. To House Bayenry, so much closer to the goddess, and with so much more to lose by letting down its guard, the Festival of the Founding had, in the days of Ivanel, the Sable Years they were called in Menzo Baranzon, been a mere formality, rarely mentioned, lightly observed, and used by the house, through Brigandy Earth spies typically, to gain information on the defenses and weaknesses of those other noble houses.
"Matron Beerton Fay has extended." Matron Mother Quenthal paused and gave a wicked little laugh, then corrected. "Matron Beerton will extend a most gracious invitation for us to dine in her worthy home, and we will accept, of course, as the founding requires of us."
"We will go to Narbondellen?" Gromph asked, with open and determined skepticism, referring to the neighborhood of manor houses, theaters, and arenas, and the compounds of two of Menzo Baranzon's 8 ruling houses. While Narbondellen was a fashionable enough address in the City of Spiders, and indeed, Gromph often visited the area, rarely before had all the nobles of House Bayenry left Kellar's Orl, the grandest district of the city, wherein resided the greatest of the noble houses, except to go to war. The tradition of the Festival of the Founding called upon unallied houses to dine together in a rare show of unity. But House Bayenry usually used that tradition to host Matron Mesbaris and her second house, Baris and Delarmgo, or vice versa.
"I await Matron Beerton's invitation," Matron Mother Quenthal said slyly, her grin now firmly aimed at Gromph.
With that, she rose and departed, leaving the old mage quite flummoxed. House Fay Branch, the 6th house of Menzo Baranzon, the house of Manolan. Why had Quenthal? Matron Mother Bayenry arranged this, Gromph wondered.
And indeed, how?
She was among the oldest drow in Menzo Baranzon, and the longest-serving matron mother, even though her house, Baris and Delarmgo, was the second youngest of all the great houses in the city, having formed a mere 8 centuries earlier. Under her guidance, House Baris and Delarmgo had climbed the ranks swiftly to the penultimate rank in the city. Barely a quarter millennium before, the little-known house had been considered no higher than the 47th house of the city, barely known and with little consideration of any of the true powers of Menzo Baranzon. The leap in ranking, all the way to 16th, had caught their attention, though, and when the matrons of the ruling council had at last bothered to look more closely at the Armgo ways and powers, it had become quite obvious that Mesbaris would not be watching the ruling council from afar for long.
Miss Barris had found her niche of power. Other houses competed for the favor of Lolf by building chapels and training priestesses, but Matron Miss Barris had veered her family down an opposite path. Barris and Delarmgo was known for its house wizards, as were their arch-rivals, the Zorlarans, but more than that. This house was the home of many of Menzo Baranzon's greatest warriors. Every year, the ranks of Mele Magvir, the Drow Academy of Warriors, included a full complement of budding Armgo warriors. The 1,000 soldiers of Barris and Delarmgo formed the backbone of the city's martial garrison and granted Mez Barris the firmest foundation for her house army, one not subject to the whims of a fickle deity or the ebbs and flows of magic. And now things had become more interesting. Matron Miss Barris was well aware of the growing instability within the one house, House Bayenry, that kept her from the pinnacle of Menzo Baranzon's power. "They march as if the entire city should stand and gape in awe," High Priestess de Aerul said to her mother, as they stood together on one of the more obscure balconies in the sprawling compound. Only recently had Barris and Delarmgo relocated to Kellart's Orl from their previous location in Narvandellin, and so their compound was not nearly as magnificent or magic-highlighted yet as the great Bayenry compound.
"They are Bayenry,"
said Melek Dorl, elder boy and weapons master of Barris and Delarmgo.
"Let Menzo Baranzon embrace them with awe, for those are the admiring looks we will know soon enough."
"Do not speak of such things openly, my impetuous child," Miss Barris scolded. But her tone showed more pride than anger. She could well imagine the parade below her being the march of her own house some day soon. But she couldn't deny the pageantry and beauty of the procession of House Bayenry, soldiers marching crisply and disciplined precision in their battle armor so finely cut and fitted. The glint of hundreds of weapons shone and sparkled in the accented magical lighting, all done to exacting precision, with spells set and aimed perfectly to catch the gleaming metal of sword or battle axe or javelin tip. Fairy fire of purple, blue, and orange highlighted the group commanders and their great subterranean lizards. Light spells seemed to emanate from within the accompanying magical jade spiders. Pony-sized versions of the great monstrosities that guarded the Bayenry compound and several other houses on Kellart's Orl. Those spiders flanked the most important contingent, the noble priestesses, and it didn't take Miss Barris long to spot Matron Mother Quenthel as she glided out of the Bayenry gates, floating on a translucent disk of purple and blue energies, her eldest daughter and Sosumtu close behind and flanking left and right on disks of their own. A magical red flame burned in the center of their triangle, backlighting Quenthel perfectly so that she seemed sealed in a halo of red light. That hue caught the matching color of her eyes so keenly that Miss Barris could see her eyes even from this distance. For just a moment, it seemed that Quenthel was staring right back at her. Undeniably, the Bayenrys knew how to march, and all the city would tremble at their passing. It took breathless Miss Barris many heartbeats to realize that this procession was not normal, even for the Festival of the Founding. Not anymore, at least. She had not seen such a thing from the vaunted Bayenrys in decades, a century and more even, not since... "Evenet," she whispered.
And it was clear to her that Matron Mother Quenthel was making an important statement to the entire city, and likely, given the departure of Matron Xerath and the Zorlarans, most keenly of all, she was sending a warning to Matron Miss Barris. Melek Dorl gave a little scowl as the lead of the procession moved past House Barris and Delarmgo, barely 50 feet from the balcony where the Armgo nobles had gathered. Weapons master Anzarel Bayenry led the procession, riding a lizard with a barding of jewels and bells, sitting tall and proud.
"Indeed," Miss Barris said, noting the source of his ire and so full of her own spittle. "Tell me again why you have not found the opportunity to kill that one."
Melek Dorl lowered his eyes. The great rivalries between the weapons masters of the first two houses went back many decades to the legendary fights between Utha Gentall Armgo and Dantrag Beenri. So it had seemed would be the case with their successors, and Malak Doral wanted nothing more. But Anzarel had shied from any conflicts of late. Mes Baris knew why. She knew of Tiago growing strong and building a great name for himself, and she knew of Elder Boy Aumon, Quenthal's oldest son, who had just completed his first year at the academy. Anzarel was playing cautiously, because any mistake he might make would see him supplanted as weapons master by one of the two eager upstarts. On and on the procession went. Finally, Mes Baris noted Gromph, surprisingly far back in the long line, riding a spectral mount of shifting hues and amorphous magic. It seemed a hell horse, then a Rothay-like creature, then something in between, then something entirely different. A smile creased Mes Baris's tight lips. Gromph hated Quenthal as much as she did, she knew, or thought she knew, and with the rise of the stature of wizards among Lolth's flock, he would be the downfall of Mes Baris's rival. "They will not dine with the Zorlarans," Priestess Te'erul asked, when it was clear that the Beenri army was moving past the wizard spire of the third house and out of Kellart's Orl altogether. By that point, the Beenri line stretched all the way from the Beenri gate to the giant mushrooms that separated Kellart's Orl from the rest of the city.
"It is the Founding," Malak Doral reminded her with confidence. "They are to dine with a house that is not allied."
His voice faded with his confidence as the two priestesses stared at him with clear amusement that he would be so concerned with such a quaint tradition.
"Matron Mother Quenthal seeks to make new inroads, no doubt," said Mes Baris. "With the impending departure of the Zorlarans, she has perhaps finally realized her open flank."
She nodded as she spoke, confident of her assertions. House Zorlaran and House Beenri, first and third, surrounded Baris and El Armgo. But while both of the next houses in line, Faen Tlabar and Mizrim, were allied with Beenri, the two remained bitter rivals, a competition that would only intensify with House Faen Tlabar's greatest ally, House Zorlaran, removed from Menzo Berenzon. Indeed, the coveted rank of third house would be opened, likely for one of these to fill the void. In terms of the relationship between houses Beenri and Armgo, then, this could not be seen as good news for Matron Mother Quenthal. While Faen Tlabar and Mizrim together might be more powerful than Zorlaran alone, the Matron Mother of House Beenri could never count on them, together or separately, to hold back the ambitions of House Baris and El Armgo as she had counted on Matron Xerath Zorlaran.
"And so the meticulous detail in the grand parade of Beenri," Mes Baris remarked quietly and nodded knowingly. Her daughter and the weapons master stared at her. "They try to project strength and order to quell the chaos that will surely reach Quenthal's front door."
Te'erul's eyes popped open wide at that remark, and even dull Malak Doral caught on to the reference of Quenthal without the appropriate title offered in deference. Houses in Menzo Berenzon had gone to war for less. The march of House Beenri wove through every neighborhood in Menzo Berenzon, even up to the raised area of Tir Bresh, where stood the three houses of the Drow Academy, and then across the west wall, across the whole of the city, before winding back to the neighborhood known as Narbon Delan, which was immediately across the mushroom forest from Kellart's Orl. From every balcony and every window, Drow looked on, and as was so typical of Menzo Berenzon, half did so with trepidation, the other half with appreciative nods at the constancy Beenri represented. The procession split as it neared Narbon Delan, select guard groups taking position outside of House Fey Branch's opened gates. Only the royal group passed through, including the siblings, Quenthal, Sosumtu, and Gromph. Quenthal's daughter, Meriniel, weapons master, Anzarel Beenri, and patron Velchrist, Quenthal's current chosen mate and once a Zorlaran house wizard. Even if this had not been the Festival of the Founding, this particular group of six would not have walked with fear, though surely almost every drow who saw them coming would cower. Matron Beertin Fay met them at the door, flanked by Manolin and Patron Callagher. Beertin seemed a bit surprised by the small number in attendance, and both Gromph and Quenthel caught a flash of something else. Annoyance? As Beertin looked past them and noted the army the Beanris had set in place outside her compound. Matron Beertin's stride revealed nervousness as she led the way to the dining hall, where a feast had been set out on a table flanked by nearly 20 chairs. Half were filled by Fey Branch nobles, the other half clearly intended for the Beanris. Beertin waved her hand, a signal, obviously, to dismiss all but her closest family members.
"Do let them all stay," Matron Mother Quenthel whispered to her. "You may fill the rest of the chairs, if you please."
She looked at Manolin.
"Your brother is not about. It would please me to see him again."
The uncharacteristic gesture rocked Manolin clearly, and she and her mother exchanged nervous glances, as if to silently question whether the Beanris were gathering them all together for a slaughter.
"We are the eldest two houses in the City of Spiders," Matron Mother Quenthel remarked. "Time has frayed our bonds, it would seem. But in this new era of the goddess's resurgence, we do well to rewind those ties."
A flash of surprise and a flash of hope crossed Beerton's face, subtly, but Gromph certainly caught every bit of it. It was common knowledge that Xerath Zorlaren was already moving many of her resources to Gontalgrim, and whispers hinted that the pressure was on for Xerath to surrender her house rank and her place on the ruling council. Fey Branch was the sixth house of Menzo Baranzon, so surely in the line of ascension. Was Matron Mother Quenthel offering her support for the third rank? Gromph noted the gaze of Manolin Fey, which he returned with a tiny shrug. His indifference eliciting a bit of a snarl from the priestess. She was on edge, the Archmage realized, and he silently congratulated his sister, if he could still think of Matron Mother Quenthel as such, for her blunt and devious twist of the mood. Matron Beertin filled the chairs with the worthiest members of her house. The six Beanris sorted themselves out among the group, mingling appropriately and not all in one area. Anzarel and Geldrin Fay, old friends from the academy, both heralded weapons masters, gathered at the far end with other warriors to discuss the recent events at Melee Magvir, while Patron Velchrist and Fey Branch House Wizard Zeknar led the discussion about the return of the Weave. Gromph, though, did not join his wizard fellows, and instead kept himself near to Matron Mother Quenthel, who sat at the head of the table, of course, with Matron Beertin to her right and Manolin Fey to her left. The food was scrumptious, the music magnificent and not overbearing, and the celebration handled with all the meticulous detail that one would expect of a noble house second only to House Beanri in longevity and tradition among the ranks of Menzo Baranzon. As was customary, the conversation remained light, with few words of scorn for houses that were not in attendance, and with each of the matrons taking turns in directing the others to voice opinions about one or another promising situation. In the City of Spiders, after all, this was the day, typically the only day, of communal hope and renewal, the one day reserved for the premise that the whole of Menzo Baranzon was greater than the familial parts.
"I was so thrilled to receive your invitation," Matron Mother Quenthel said to Beertin at one point.
Gromph watched Manolin stiffen, for the invitation had been solicited in no uncertain terms, of course.
"We are the elders, the cornerstones of Menzo Baranzon, the constancy within the swirl of continually shifting power and allegiance."
Beanri gave a little, almost embarrassed laugh and added,
"Although some things, like the pinnacle of Menzo Baranzon's power, are indeed eternal."
An amazing show of hubris by that self-proclaimed pinnacle, Gromph thought. He wasn't surprised, as obviously were both Beertin and Manolin, or taken aback, but rather more intrigued. Had his sister made this remark only a day earlier, Gromph would have thought it a clumsy blunder, but now, after her intimate melding with the experiences of Ivanel, he knew it to be a cunning twist. Matron Mother Ivanel the Eternal did not make mistakes, and so Gromph now expected, to his own surprise, the same competence from Quenthel.
"Where has the trust and friendship between Beanri and Fay Branch gone?" she asked with an exaggerated sigh.
"Thinned by death, no doubt," Matron Beerton replied, a subtle hint of annoyance creeping into her voice.
Gromph coughed to cover his chuckle. Thinned by death was a perfect description, the old archmage thought, for House Fay Branch had lost so many nobles over the last few decades to untimely death. Beerton and her house had retreated, defensively crouched, with more than a little suspicion that House Beanri had played a role in many of those untimely deaths, with good reason.
"Yes," Quenthel agreed, playing along. "Too much thinned."
Minolin Fay shifted in her seat, clearly uncomfortable, on the verge of blurting out the obvious and totally inappropriate question as to why Matron Mother Quenthel had demanded this shared dinner.
"I am told that Matron Zirith will soon depart," Matron Beerton said. "What will become of the Zorlaran Tower on Kellart's Orl, I wonder?"
"It will not be open to the new third house," Matron Mother Quenthel replied.
"Whomever that will be," said Matron Beerton, somewhat slyly.
"It will not be Fay Branch, if that is your thought," Matron Mother Quenthel replied,
and now even Gromph could not suppress his incredulity. Minolin shifted again and seemed on the verge of lashing out. Matron Beerton rocked back away from Quenthel, her mouth hanging open. Around them, everyone at the table quieted suddenly, and Gromph began considering the words to a spell that would efficiently evacuate him from this potentially lethal bar fight.
"You are no ambitious child, Beerton," Matron Mother Quenthel went on, undeterred, and even upping the stakes here by leaving off the female's title. "It is no secret in the city that Fay Branch is considered without allies, and that Matron Shindia of the fanatical Melarni has set her eyes on ascending the ladder. Were you to reach for Matron Zirith's seat at the ruling council, you would have three superior houses coveting your downfall. Such banter is not appropriate on the Festival of the Founding," Minolin Fay interrupted.
"Nor is it an excuse for a priestess to forget her place," Matron Beerton scolded.
"Your exchange will cost both our houses the favor of Lolf,"
Minolin pleaded with Matron Mother Quenthel.
"Dear child,"
Matron Mother Quenthel, who was no older than Minolin, replied, her voice dripping with condescending sweetness.
"Do not ever again make the error of explaining to me the desires of Lolf."
There was an old saying among the drow that the ears of a matron mother were so keen they could catch the rustle of a strand of hair falling to the floor. In that moment, the room became so suddenly quiet that Gromph believed the proverb was not an exaggeration. Matron Mother Quenthel looked to Matron Beerton as if inviting her to speak, but the other woman did not oblige, and instead went back to her meal, as did everyone else. Not another word was spoken for a long, long while. House servants cleared the plates quickly when the meal was ended, and Matron Beerton led the group to an adjacent, even larger room where the attendees milled around in smaller groups. Gromph made his way to Velkrist and the other wizards, but kept his attention quietly attuned to the focus of the evening, the matron mothers and their respective high priestesses. He watched as Sosumptu rushed over to speak with Matron Beerton, pointing off to the south to another set of rooms. A moment later, Beerton, Sosumptu, and Meriniel moved off that way, leaving Matron Mother Quenthel, so conveniently, alone with Minolin Fay. That pair headed off as well, but to the west. Gromph rubbed his thumb against a ring on his index finger, secretly sending an invisible projection in their wake, his senses following the duo as they crossed out of the room, down a small corridor,
and through a set of double doors onto a balcony looking out to the pillar of Narbondel and beyond it to the western reaches of Menzo Baranzon.
Matron Mother Quentha looked back, her expression curious. A wave of her hand shut the door, and did more than that, Grumph realized, for his spell was no more, the connection broken.
Beside him, Velkrist chattered on about something to do with a Zorlaran expedition to Gontalgrim, the Fey branch mages hanging on his every word. The success of the Zorlarans, the one drow house that elevated arcane magic to the level of the divine, held great implications for them as wizards and as male drow.
Grumph pretended to listen.
Of course, he knew far more about the goings-on in Gontalgrim than Velkrist ever would, since he had arranged the expedition in the first place. But he kept his gaze to the west, to the doors through which Matron Mother Quenthel and Manolan Fay had exited, almost expecting an explosion of some kind to tear the western wing off the compound of Fay Branch. He couldn't predict the movements of Quenthel any longer, he realized then. And he could not control them or even influence them to any great extent. The implications of his gift to his sister weighed heavily upon his old shoulders.
"I owe you a great apology," Bayenri said to Manolan when they were alone. The heat glow of Narbondel had begun to diminish by then, the day growing late. The priestess stared at Bayenri, suspicion dominating her expression. "For years now I have been abusing you, thinking you worthy of my disdain, thinking you a sniveling child and nothing more," the matron mother of Menzo Baranzon went on. "I only allowed you to remain in a position of power at Erech Tynalith, because doing so spoke to the city of the glories of old. House Fey Branch should be powerfully represented in the Academy of Lolth, of course. But then, since it was pathetic you, how powerful would the position truly prove?"
Manolan stiffened at the insult, her eyes narrowing, one fist clenching at her side. She wanted to lash out, but Bayenri knew Manolan would not summon the courage to do so. This one was not a fighter, but a plotter, working with subterfuge and caution within the shadows.
"Little did I understand the adamantine of your bones," Bayenri went on, "or the cleverness lurking behind your dull eyes."
Those eyes flared at that remark. Manolan was obviously off balance, insulted and angry indeed, but also cornered by an enemy she knew she could not hope to defeat.
"You thought you had Grumph in your web," Bayenri openly taunted. "You truly believed that you could turn his distrust and disapproval of Mere Quenthel against the eternal Bayenri."
The blunt remark had Manolan falling back a step. Her game was over, clearly. For years she had quietly worked on Grumph, using every wile, whispering, undermining words against Quenthel, the witch Quenthel, whom Grumph had hated through the decades. Matron Mother Quenthel watched all of those thoughts play out on the trapped priestess's face, circling through anger and fear, the willingness to throw herself into the fray against the hope that somehow, some way, she could mitigate this personal disaster. And that circle was a spiral, Bayenri knew, and one driving Manolan ever downward into despair. Yes, she would play through the logic here. She was no fool, but a calculating and devious witch, a true devotee to Lady Lolth. And so Manolan knew, without doubt, that the sudden insight of her arch-enemy, this matron mother standing before her, had to have come from Lady Lolth herself. And so she knew that she was surely doomed. Manolan lifted a hand. Even a mouse would fight in such a corner, but of course Matron Mother Quenthel was the quicker. The scourge of Quenthel appeared in her hand, the five writhing snakeheads hungrily striking at poor Manolan, taunting her telepathically as they invaded her tender flesh. The priestess's eyes widened with horror as she felt the pleasure of Kasothra, who would taste blood to be content.
Manolin gasped and fell away as Zinda's fangs reached for her face, for it was fear that Zinda most desired from her enemies.
Do not resist,
the third serpent Shiv advised, a soothing melody whispering through Manolin's thoughts, and one so discordant with the excruciating pain of Serpent Korra's fiery poison. The fifth snake, Ingoth, did not strike but swayed tantalizingly before Manolin's eyes as the priestess slumped back against the wall. In those black eyes, Manolin would see hope, Matron Mother Quenthal knew. For the living serpents of her scourge imparted to her their methods, of course, and asked her permission to continue. Manolin Fay was overwhelmed. Only the wall held her up as the snakes retreated. Then it was the iron grasp of Matron Mother Quenthal, taking her by the arm and dragging her away through another door from the balcony and into a small sitting room. Benri shoved Manolin forward. The priestess crashed through some chairs and barely held her balance. She struggled for a few moments, seeming on the verge of collapse, but then stood straight and spun around to face her adversary.
You dare strike me in my own house, and on this day of festival?
She started to growl, but the words caught in her throat as Bayenri lifted a clawed hand and reached out with her magic.
Yield, she said simply.
Manolin wanted to spit, of course, but instead she fell to her knees, driven there by the power of the spell, held there by the will of Quenthal Bayenri.
I will never underestimate you again, clever assassin,
Matron Mother Quenthal said.
Indeed, my scorn for you is removed, replaced by...
Grumph Bayenri burst into the room.
Admiration.
Matron Mother Quenthal finished, smiling wickedly and looking at the archmage as if to ask him what had taken him so long.
On this day,
Grumph stammered with obvious shock.
In this time...
Matron Mother Quenthal lowered her scourge, the snakes going to their writhing dance and sleep as the weapon fell to the end of its wyvern hide hoop at her hip. She held her hands up innocently as if in surrender.
Decide where your loyalties lie,
she said to Grumph.
The Spider Queen will not have her archmage divided in his loyalties, not in this majestic time. You would secretly lead House Bayenri, so you hoped, and a 10 day ago your choice would have been an easy one.
Dear sister,
Grumph said. And in that instant the face of the matron mother of Menzo Baranzon darkened with rage and twisted with the weight of centuries, and for just a flash of time glared at him with an awful power bared.
Matron mother,
he quietly corrected, lowering his gaze.
No,
cried Manolin Fay, her eyes wide, her expression shocked to see mighty Grumph so cowed.
You will never lead Bayenri,
the matron mother calmly remarked.
Strike at her,
Manolin cried.
It is just Quenthal.
Grumph's gaze snapped up, full of anger. But it fell over Manolin and not his sister. The priestess of Fey Branch fell back, her arms coming up defensively, as if she expected Grumph to destroy her utterly, then and there.
I am with child,
she shrieked as she fell away to prostrate herself on the floor.
Your child,
she begged pathetically. Matron Mother Quenthal smiled knowingly as Grumph turned his astonished expression her way. With a nod to Manolin, the matron mother began to cast a spell and the wizard followed suit. A pair of spectral drow hands, one male, one female, appeared above the prostrated priestess, and together they reached down and grabbed her around the folds of her robes and jerked her back to her feet so abruptly that it took her a moment to even realize that she was standing. She started to speak once more, both Grumph and Matron Mother Quenthal moving to silence her. But then all three fell silent, as there erupted a great tumult from inside the Fay Branch house, shrieks and screams, and the clatter of dropped glasses and tumbling furniture.
"House Banry wars upon us!"
Minolan Fay said with a gasp.
"Matron Mother," Grump asked, turning Quenthel's way.
But the Matron Mother of Menzo Berenzon wore a look of serenity, her expression telling the other two that this was no attack. The interior door of the sitting room swung open, and in strode a drow female of extraordinary beauty and presence.
"Yorthe,"
Matron Mother Quenthel greeted, using the term reserved for the greatest chosen being of Lady Loth, a particular priestess who had become the vessel of Loth in the War of the Spider Queen. Matron Mother Quenthel, the leader of Menzo Berenzon, the supreme drow of the City of Spiders, ended her greeting with a deep and respectful bow. Manolan swallowed hard before the specter, the avatar of the Spider Queen herself. Beyond the female in the other room, the minions of House Fay Branch and the four remaining Banrys followed the glorious creature, and all of them were on their knees, crawling, and with their eyes respectfully aimed at the floor. Minolan shuffled uncomfortably, almost imperceptibly, but Matron Mother Quenthel caught it and understood. Minolan knew that she should be kneeling, of course, particularly when Gromp fell to his knees beside her. She wanted to drop, but she could not, Bayenri knew, because the avatar before them, a priestess who had once been known as Danathe Yontir, would not let her fall. Matron Mother Quenthel fixed Minolan with a knowing glance and a taunting grin. Any thoughts Minolan Fay had entertained of revenge against Matron Mother Quenthel had just been washed away, they both knew. The incarnation of Lady Loth glided across the room, passing before Minolan and pausing there only to put her hand on the trembling priestess's belly, not yet swollen with child. She moved to stand before the matron mother and nodded and smiled, then fixed Quenthel Bayenri with the most passionate kiss.
"My eternal servant,"
the avatar said, gently stroking the matron mother's tender cheek. Then she walked past Bayenri, out onto the balcony, and floated off into nothingness.
"Loth appeared,"
cried one of the priestesses in the room beyond, several daring to climb to their feet once more.
"The festival is a success," another yelled.
For indeed, the festival of the founding was a day when all the drow of Menzo Berenzon hoped that Lady Loth would make an appearance among them, a sign that they remained in her good graces. Cheers and chatter echoed around the compound, spreading out to the streets beyond. All the city would soon know of Loth's appearance, Matron Mother Quenthel understood. Matron Mez Barris Armgo would soon know. Matron Beerton moved up beside her, and Bayenri was glad to see the look of reverence splayed upon the old matron's face.
"It is a sign to us," Bayenri quietly explained. "House Fay Branch is vulnerable no more. You are no longer without an ally."
Matron Beerton bowed before the supreme matron mother of Menzo Berenzon.
"You will marry,"
Matron Mother Quenthel instructed Gromph and Minolan.
"Marry?"
Gromph chortled, for indeed Minolan was hardly the first priestess to bear one of his children, and if he had his way, she would hardly be the last. Matron Mother Quenthel turned and waved Sosumtu and Meriniel back, then waved the door closed in their faces, leaving only Beerton, Gromph, and Minolan in the room with her.
"You are with child, and that child is a girl,"
she explained to Minolan.
"She will be raised in House Bayenri, where you will forevermore reside at my side."
"Minolan is the High Priestess of Fay Branch,"
Matron Beerton protested, but Bayenri silenced her with a look.
"And your child will be groomed as my successor,"
Bayenri said. Beerton gasped. And you will name her.
She fixed Gromph with a sly look.
Ivanel.
He finished for her quietly, catching on. The matron mother sidled up to Manon, who trembled visibly. Bayenri reached up to stroke her smooth cheek, and the priestess tried unsuccessfully to shy from the touch.
If you fail in this, you will suffer eternity at the feet of the Spider Queen, her poison burning in your blood with an agony that will never relent, she warned.
I will serve,
Manolan said, her voice thin and shaky.
When the child is born, I will properly train.
You are an egg and nothing more,
Matron Mother Quenthal sharply interrupted.
Do not think yourself worthy to train Ivanel Bayenri.
Manolan didn't dare respond.
Ivanel the Eternal,
Matron Mother Quenthal said, turning back to Gromph.
The babe's instruction will begin at once.
It took Gromph a moment to figure out what she meant, but when he did, his eyes widened, and he gasped audibly in disbelief.
No.
Bayenri's smug smile mocked him. Both she and Gromph imagined the tentacles of Methil crawling over the naked flesh of Manolan Fay Branch, finding their way to the growing consciousness of the life inside her, imparting the memories and the sensibilities that Gromph had saved within the split skull of his dead mother. Chapter 4. Unforgiven. A muddy gang of five crossed into the northern end of the pass that led south through the spine of the world. Their trip from Ten Towns across the tundra had been uneventful, but hardly easy in the days of the early spring melt, where bottomless bogs hid cleverly among the patches of ice and sludge, where sinkholes opened suddenly to swallow a rider and his mount whole, where mud bubbles of trapped gases grew like boils as the ice of winter relinquished its hold. Such bulbous sludge mounds appeared all about the trail, sometimes blocking it, and were known to explode, sending forth a shower of cold mud. This group had found more than their share of those natural mud bombs, particularly the three walking beside the tall mount that carried the man and the woman. They appeared almost monochrome, head to toe layered in brown, where even their smiles, on the rare occasions they managed one, showed flecks of mud. Heavy boots pulled from the grabbing ground, sucking sounds accompanying each step.
"Sure, but I'm not to miss this foul land,"
said the dwarf, and she lifted her boot and turned her leg, scraping at the mud pack. Her effort cost her balance, though, and she stumbled to the side, crashing against the large steed, which snorted in protest and stamped its fiery hoof hard, splattering mud and sending the dwarf and her two cohorts ducking.
"Ah, but control your smelly nightmare,"
the dwarf bellowed. "I am," Artemis Entreri casually replied from his high perch. "It did not stomp you into the ground, did it? And believe me when I tell you that the Hell Horse would like nothing more."
"Bah!"
Amber the dwarf snorted in reply, and she wiped a patch of mud from her shoulder, then snapped her hand out at Entreri, throwing the mud his way.
"It is not the best season to be crossing the tundra, I expect,"
said Brother Afafrenfir. The monk had trained in the Bloodstone Lands, in the mountains of Damara, right beside the frozen wastes of Vasa, so he was the most experienced of the troop in the manner of terrain found in Icewind Dale.
"Another 10 day in one of the towns would have served us well."
Afafrenfir never looked up as he spoke, just kept his head low under the cowl of his wooden hood, and so he did not see the scowl from the woman riding on the nightmare behind Entreri. "Another 10 day deeper into the spring would have meant more monsters awake from their winter nap and prowling around hungry," Entreri said. and the others all recognized that he made the remark merely to calm Dahlia, who had been in a foul mood since they left Drisdo Urden on the slopes of Kelvin's Cairn a dozen days before. None of the five hardy adventurers were afraid of such monsters, of course, and indeed, they were all itching for a fight. They had awakened from a sleep in an enchanted forest, a slumber that had seen the passage of 18 years, though it seemed no more than a night's sleep to the band. After their numb shock at the revelation, they had tried to look on the bright side of their magically created dilemma, for, as Amber had pointed out, they had gone to sleep as fugitives, with many powerful enemies searching for them, yet had awakened in freedom, in anonymity even, if that was their choice, likely more so than any of them had known in decades. But since that night on Kelvin's Cairn, the mood had turned sour, particularly with Dahlia, and none had found much relief from the dismal pall while tramping through the endless mud of Icewind Dale.
"We're not yet in civilized lands,"
warned Efren, the fifth of the group, a small and skinny tiefling warlock with a broken and twisted body, his collar and shoulders mangled so that his right arm swung uselessly behind him. All eyes turned his way. These were among the first words he had spoken since their departure from the mountain.
"You have seen them, then?" Entreri asked.
"Of course, shadowing us. And it frightens me that I travel with companions who have not noted the clear signs. You think he might be talking less in riddles for the rest of us?"
Amber asked.
"We are being followed," Afafrenfir answered. "For more than a day now. Large forms, bigger than goblins, than hobgoblins even."
"Giants?"
the dwarf asked with a glint in her eye.
"Yetis,"
Afafrenfir replied.
"Do tell."
Entreri crossed his arms on the neck of his conjured nightmare steed and leaned forward, seeming amused.
"Vossa is known for such beasts," the monk explained. "They are quite ferocious, and a mere scratch of their claws is known to cause disease and a lingering death. That is, if you are fortunate enough to avoid being eaten alive by them."
"Never heard of them,"
said the dwarf.
"Nor I,"
Dahlia said.
"Then let's hope they remain no more than the warning of a tired monk on a muddy trail,"
Afafrenfir said and started away.
"Well, since you two are up high and not crawling in the mud like the rest of us, perhaps you should keep your eyes to the horizon,"
Efren said. There was a clear undertone of disdain in his voice, underlying the general discontent that had followed the quintet out of 10 towns, an argument that had become particularly virulent between the twisted tiefling warlock and his mother, Dahlia. Dahlia returned his words with a sharp glare, but Entreri continued to lean and to wear his amused grin. They climbed a narrower trail through a maze of tumbled boulders, which had them all on edge, since the huge stones provided fine cover to any would-be ambushers. The path soon leveled off, then began a descent into the gorge, cutting through the towering mountains. Any who ever crossed this way could not help but imagine enemies far above, raining death upon them in the form of arrows or stones. Entreri and Dahlia led the way on the nightmare, and it was a fortunate choice. Barely had the group returned to level ground, walking amid a boulder-strewn wider section of the trail, when the ground before them exploded. A large and thick, hairy creature leaped up from the concealment of a puddle of mud. Seeming like a cross between a tall man and a burly bear, the hulking creature lifted up to its full height in the blink of an eye, heavy arms raised high above its head, dirty claws ready to swipe down. The nightmare reared and snorted puffs of black smoke from its wide nostrils, but it was not afraid as a normal horse surely would have been. Hellsteeds did not know fear, only anger. Dahlia went with the movement, gracefully rolling off the back of the mount as its forelegs rose up into the air.
She landed on her feet, though the mud nearly took them out from under her, and skidded aside quickly, scrambling away from the dangerous rear legs of the battling nightmare. She started, as if to charge around the horse and Entreri, her magical quarterstaff at the ready. But no sooner had she landed than Amber called out from behind. Reflexively glancing that way, Dahlia saw that this Tundra Yeti had not come after them alone. As surprised as he was, for the Tundra Yeti had blended perfectly into the muddy trail ahead, Entreri managed to hold his saddle, although only barely, tightly gripping the reins against his chest with all his strength. The nightmare lashed out with its forelegs as the Yeti brought its claws sweeping down, both monsters striking hard, both crying out in response. The Yeti with a heavy grunt as the blow from the hoofs sent it skidding backward, the nightmare with an otherworldly shriek that sounded of pain perhaps, but more so of anger. The steed fell to all fours and tugged back against Entreri with such power that it almost flipped him forward over its head, and indeed, he smashed his face into the nightmare's neck. He felt the warmth of blood trickling from his nose, and a wave of pain that again had him holding on desperately as his mount leaped forward to engage. Entreri shook the dizziness away and, wanting no part of this monstrous tangle, threw himself off the side of the nightmare right before the powerful combatants collided. He hit the ground in a roll, sloshing through puddles and mud, and came around to one knee just as the area behind him uplifted in a spray of mud and stones, a second Yeti lifting up from concealment, towering over the kneeling, seemingly helpless man. At the back of the line, Efren spun around to see a Yeti leap up from behind a boulder to stand high atop the rock. It beat its powerful chest and issued a great roar.
"Yell louder,"
Efren quietly implored it, as he lowered his bone staff and lashed out with a bolt of dark magic that shot from the eyes of the small skull that topped the powerfully enchanted weapon. The ray hit the Yeti in the belly, sizzling its brown coat, and indeed it roared all the louder, nearly falling off the back of the rock from the impact. Efren, hardly about to wait around for the creature to regroup, cast a second spell, one he always kept ready, and his body flattened, becoming two-dimensional, more like a shadow than a living being. And the Yeti roared all the louder in protest then when the twisted warlock slipped down into the ground.
"Where ye going?"
Amber cried out as he disappeared. Just before her, Afa Frenfear joined Dahlia, the two sprinting off across the trail from the Yeti Efren had hit, at yet another beast that had appeared between a pair of flat-topped rocks, each about waist-high to the monk.
"Wait, what?"
the dwarf called, hopping all around, looking for Efren, who was gone. Then turning to the Yeti the twisted warlock had stung, which was clearly outraged, then turning to the pair running off the other way. She chased Dahlia and Afa Frenfear, three against one, she thought, and liked the odds. But then two more Yetis appeared, one rising up behind each of the rocks flanking the trio's intended target.
"Oh, by the gods!"
the dwarf muttered. And she skidded up against a nearby boulder and cast a spell that made her sink right into it, melding with the stone.
"Find a strike behind my move,"
Afa Frenfear instructed, and he sprinted in front of Dahlia, fearlessly bearing down on the three hairy behemoths. He leaped atop the stone to the left, right before one startled Yeti, and right beside the initial target. The Yeti behind the stone roared and swung hard, but Afa Frenfear moved ahead of the blow, leaping above it into a backflip that also brought him above the reach of the Yeti in the middle. That centering beast watched him rise, and so it didn't take note of the heavy follow-through of its companion, and caught the swipe of the first Yeti right in the face. The monk landed lightly on the other stone, launching immediately into a circle kick that smacked the third Yeti right in the face. But even with that tremendous force behind it, the kick did little to drive the monster back, and it responded with a slash of its claws that had the monk diving back for the center of the trail. The Yeti half leaped, half rolled over the boulder in close pursuit. So focused was it on the human that had kicked it in the face that it hardly noticed Dahlia rushing past it the other way. She thought that a good thing. In she charged at the tangled other two, leading the way with a straightforward stab of her powerful staff, Koza's needle, driving its tip right into the torn flesh of the Yeti standing between the stones. That strike alone would have brought forth a howl of agony, but Dahlia made it all the more devastating, releasing a blast of lightning through the staff. With a crackle of energy and a puff of gray smoke, the Yeti fell away.
"Hold them!"
Afa Frenfear cried from far behind her.
"Of course,"
she replied dryly, as if in agreement